We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 2:41. The Chicago Cubs have now gone 101 years without winning a World Series. But next week, they'll take the diamond for the first time in 2010 with hopes of making this the year fans have long hoped for. Documentary filmmaker John Sheinfeld spent a full season following the team while compiling interviews with players, fans, and baseball minds like Bob Costas, George Will, and Steve Stone. Jeff Bossert spoke with Sheinfeld about his film We Believe, which documents the relationship between the city of Chicago and the Cubs and why fans have stayed loyal for so long.
In starting out to make this film, I wanted to make it different than every other Cubs-related documentary that I'd seen, and most of them had been sort of straight-ahead history of the Cubs and all of that, and so we wanted to do something that was different. And what struck me and continues to strike me is that there really is an extraordinary love affair between Cubs fans and that team. And I set out to really explore why that is. What is it about Chicago and the territory around it that makes it unique, different than, say, Boston, New York, St. Louis? What is it about the people of Chicago in the Midwest that make them different than people from other parts of the country? And then why is it that they root so passionately for this team? And that's really what this film's about. It's not really a history of Chicago, though there are parts of it. It's not really a history of the Cubs, although there are parts of that in there as well. It's really sort of trying to weave together a tapestry, if you will, to try to explain all these things. And that's what I set out to do, and that's what I think we did pretty well.
I grew up in Champaign, which is midway between Chicago and St. Louis. At an age too tender to make life-shaping decisions, I had to choose really between the Cubs and the Cardinals. All my friends became Cardinal fans and grew up cheerful and liberal. I became a gloomy conservative, life-shaping, as I say.
I think the prototypical Cub fan is best summed up early. George Will had to make this life decision when he was just a child, and we see a photo of him as a child, and all his friends are Cardinal fans.
We interviewed a lot of Cubs fans for this film in the course of making it, and I remember one Cubs fan said to me, well, you know, how hard is it to root for the Yankees? They win all the time. I just thought that was sort of a very amusing way to look at it. But, again, the thing that struck me about Cubs fans is that it's not about winning or losing. It's about the passion for this team. And George is so eloquent on the subject of baseball and on the subject of being a Cubs fan. He's peppered throughout the whole film, and he has wonderful, wonderful things to say. And one of the subjects that we sort of touch on is people from the Midwest are different than people from other parts of the country. And I remember asking George, so, you know, why is that? He paused for a second, and he said, well, it's because the Midwest is flat. And I must have given him a look like, what are you talking about? Because he said, no, think about it. He said, there's no mountains or anything. So you can, there's no limit to your horizon. You can see as far as you want. You can go as far as you want. And you can write your own future. And again, I think from my point of view, one of the things that struck me is this relentless optimism of people in the Midwest and Cubs fans that, you know, this year's going to be the year. And there's a resilience to being a Cubs fan and being from the Midwest that, again, I think contributes to making those people, because I am one myself, very unique.
You know, one thing I like that you did is you educated maybe some fans of other teams or people that are much younger Cub fans and explained to them that they were a really successful team in the first part of the last century. I mean, they were, I believe Gary Sinise, the narrator, said, were dominant at one point.
They were totally dominant. They were really the first baseball dynasty of the 20th century for a period of about 10, 12 years. They had more wins than any other team, and that includes the Yankees and the New York Giants. Again, I think, you know, the media has a tendency to grab on to simple storylines that they can and they repeat them over and over and over again. You know, the Cubs, the lovable losers, and all of that. And like so many things, history is a lot more complex, and the Cubs' history is a lot more complex. They were a great team from 1927 to 1938. So there's a lot of things in the Cubs' history that I think defy the media's notion of what this team is. But the fact is they have not won a World Series since 1908, although they've come close. And again, I think by relating that kind of history, what we're also looking at is there's reason to be optimistic here.
One of my favorite moments of the movie is this 3D simulation you did of 1908, September 23rd of 1908, and the Fred Merkle game. Again, more history for people that may not be that familiar with the Cubs over 100 years ago, how this sort of a Steve Bartman wearing a uniform, a New York Giants uniform, pulled this base running gaffe that helped the Cubs get to the series that year. I don't know if it's too hard to explain how you put that together, because obviously you don't have a lot, you don't have footage, or at least not very much, of 1908. But I really liked how you put the images, the players, and the 3D feel of that ballpark together.
Oh, well, you're nice to say. Well, I felt in telling the story that game, that incident, was a critical one. That the Cubs have both benefited from and suffered from what Lou Piniella calls Cubby occurrences. And that may have been the first one back in 1908. And we really did have a problem because there were no photos of that game. There was no film of that game. And so rather than just have a lot of talking heads sitting around describing what happened, I wanted to find a fun way to dramatize it, to illustrate it. One of the cool things about what I do is I have a lot of tools at my disposal to tell the story. And these days, what can be done technologically is just amazing. And so we were doing the post-production at an editing house in Chicago called Cutters, and they have an affiliated company called Soul, S-O-L. And I went up to them, and I said, all right, so I've got this problem. I want to tell this story, but I don't have any elements to tell it with. How can we do it? And they came up with the idea, said, if you can get me photos of the park, if you can get me photos of some of the players that played in that game, we'll create this thing. And that's what they did, and they really did a spectacular job. And we also wanted to have a little fun with it, so people, when they see that sequence, will know we put in some cartoon-like sound effects and stuff, just to have a little fun with it, to show that, yes, we're not really recreating this game, but we're trying to give you a sense of what it might have been like had you been sitting in the stands on that day.
You did find some footage, though. I believe, didn't you have, was it 1909 or a short film clip, of the oldest known film clip of the Cubs playing?
Yeah, we found, in the course of making this film, we found some really amazing and rare footage. The most important, of course, is buried deep within the Library of Congress. We found what is the very first known footage of a Cubs game ever shot, movie footage. It was shot in the spring of 1909. It's about 4 minutes of it, and we showcased that in a section of the film. We can't say for sure, but we think this may even be the very first game footage, known game footage of a Major League Baseball game. There's footage shot in baseball parks in 1904, 1905, 1906, but it's mostly players warming up on the side and fans in the stands. And here's an actual game footage. It was really pretty extraordinary, and the quality of the footage is great. They shot it from two points of view, one from behind home plate, and then somebody got up in the stands and shot down at it, and it was just beautiful to watch. We also found color footage shot at Wrigley Field in 1938 for the World Series there when they were playing the Yankees. And it's Lou Gehrig in color at first base and Cubs players. And again, pretty extraordinary. Whenever I make a film, I like to go out and find as much rare and unseen footage as possible. I don't like to keep using and reusing the same footage that you've seen in other productions. So we've got a lot of really rare, rare stuff here. Including a lot of super rare photographs from the early days. And I might also add that because, again, one of the stars of our film here is the city of Chicago, We found some great early footage of the city of Chicago as well. We found the very first film known to be shot in the city in 1897 by Thomas Edison. We found some other footage shot in 1902 and again some more in 1909. And so for people who know that area or are interested in history, there's some great little nuggets like that that they can watch and have some fun seeing.
Around 40,000 people are singing Go Cubs Go when they're in the park every time they win. And how many of those people really know the origins of the song? And I'm really glad you did a short segment on Steve Goodman.
Oh, thanks. Well, that was to me a real sort of touch-your-heart section. It was a game a few days after opening day in 2008, and the Cubs actually won this game against Milwaukee. And I was sitting in the stands, and the fans were getting so into singing Go Cubs Go and dancing, and parents had kids up on their shoulders and they were dancing, and I thought it was just such a joyous moment and a joyous song, and I didn't know who wrote it. So I leaned over to somebody and said, "Do you know who did this?" And they said, "No." And I leaned over to somebody in the front and said, "Do you know who wrote this song?" "No, I don't know who wrote it." Anyway, I finally found out who wrote the song, and I thought this would be a really sort of interesting thing, and the more I looked into it, the more interesting Steve Goodman's story became, because in many ways he's the prototypical Cubs fan, somebody who loved this team, who would give up a concert, would give up moments with his family so that he could go to a Cubs game. That watching the Cubs play meant so much to him. And like so many Cubs fans, he never did see them make it to the playoffs or did not see them make it back to the World Series. And in fact, he died in 1984, 12 days before they made it back to the playoffs for the first time since 1945. So some poignancy and some emotion to the story that I think is very much part of every Cubs thing.
Any future projects tied with the Cubs? I assume you're moving on to other things. I would think, though, if the team sees any success, something might lure you back to the area.
As a filmmaker, I like each project to be a little different. I really don't want to be typed, John does this or
okay.
John does that. So I expect I am working on other projects now and subjects about which I'm equally passionate. What I really would hope, to tell you the truth, is what would bring me back would be a Cubs win in the World Series, and then we can put a new ending on the film.
I will always be hoping you will always be holding my heart in your hand. When it will be right, I don't know. What it will be like, I don't know. We live in hope, our deliverance from the darkness that surrounds us. Hope, our deliverance. Hope, our deliverance.
Jeff Bossert talked with filmmaker John Sheinfeld about his 2008 documentary, a tribute to Cub fans everywhere, called We Believe. The DVD comes out April 13th and is available online at WeBelieveTheMovie.com. There will also be a special screening of the film April 11th at Chicago's Music Box Theater. It's 5 minutes before 3 o'clock, 82 degrees in Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the Illinois and Indiana area. This afternoon, partly to mostly sunny, windy and warm, highs ranging from 77 in northwestern Indiana to 85 in west central Illinois. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows between 52 and 58. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, windy and warm, highs ranging from 76 in northwestern Indiana to 83 in southeastern Illinois. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly sunny, windy, unseasonably warm, the high in the low 80s, the wind from the south at 15 to 25 miles per hour with higher gusts. Tonight, partly cloudy, breezy and mild, the low 55, the wind from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny and windy, the high 76. The wind tomorrow from the south at 15 to 25 miles per hour with higher gusts. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, breezy and mild, with a chance of a shower or thunderstorm after midnight, the low tomorrow night, 56. Saturday, cloudy with periods of rain, perhaps a thunderstorm, the high 65. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a bit cooler, the low 44. Sunday, partly to mostly sunny with a high of 68.
Earth and sky.
Many scientists believe that more than 60 million years ago, an asteroid 6 miles wide struck in Mexico's Yucatan and triggered the end of the dinosaurs. Earth Sky spoke with astrophysicist David Helfand of Columbia University on the risk to people today from killer asteroids.
The very big ones, the ones that have global consequences, such as the one 64 million years ago that killed the dinosaurs, are very rare. They hit the Earth roughly every 100 million years or so.
Dr. Helfand said that scientists today are tracking large space rocks that are potentially hazardous.
Right now, the survey is pretty complete for objects larger than a kilometer in size.
Helfand added that tracking an asteroid is just the first step. The next step is prevention of a collision with Earth.
Several ideas have been proposed, throwing up nuclear weapons at them, throwing up a satellite that gravitationally tugs it away a little bit, so its orbit changes ever so slightly, just enough to miss the Earth as it whizzes past.
In 2029, asteroid Apophis, about the size of a football stadium, will whisk closely past Earth. Scientists are confident it will miss, but Helfand said Apophis is a good reminder that killer asteroids are out there. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe offers specialty coffees, breakfast featuring a choice of cold and hot breakfast items from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., and to-go sandwiches and salads for lunch. Bevere Cafe is student-operated in Bevere Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3, Urbana. Online at will.illinois.edu. 1 minute before 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Coming up tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel will be with us. They are with the dog.